So we are in Nehemiah, and I believe that we got all the way down to probably chapter 2:11. And what's going on is Nehemiah was the cupbearer for the emperor, was looking kind of grumpy one day, and the emperor says, "What's your problem?" And he says, "I'm really sad about my city, and I'd like to go build the walls." And the king not only gave him permission, he sent with him a large amount of gold and silver and artifacts, and he gave him a military escort. The first thing he did, I'm in 2:9, "Then I came to the governors of the province beyond the river and gave them the king's letters. Now the king had sent with me officers of the army and horsemen. But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite servant heard this, it displeased them greatly that someone had come to seek the welfare of Israel." As I said last time, keep an eye on Tobiah. He's an Ammonite, which means that he is of the people who are from the east side of the Jordan River. Sanballat, not really sure who he is. I was reading a commentary, and the commentary wasn't sure either. It's entirely possible that he is a Samaritan from Beth Horon, but that's speculation. That takes us down to chapter 2, verse 11. "So I went to Jerusalem and was there 3 days." So he's in Jerusalem, hangs out there for 3 days, and one of the commentaries that I read said that he was praying about his mission for 3 days, and I don't doubt that for a minute. But he has not announced to anybody really what he's doing. He's there, he's got the king's letter, he's got military escort with him and so forth, but he hasn't made a big announcement at this point. And first thing he's going to do is he's going to go survey Jerusalem and see what the status of everything is. Now, I've got a map behind me of Jerusalem at the time of Nehemiah. And for those out in podcast land, you can look up Jerusalem map and Nehemiah, and they're all over the internet, so you can get these for yourself. The one I have is from maps-jerusalem.com, and it's a line map of the city. So the first thing he's going to do is he's going to go out secretly with just a few of his, I would imagine, staff, and take a look and see how big the problem is. So verse 11 again. "So I went to Jerusalem, was there 3 days. Then I arose in the night, and I and a few men with me. And I told no one what my God had put into my heart to do for Jerusalem. There was no animal with me, but the one on which I rode." I have no idea why that sentence says that. He's riding either on a horse or a mule. And why he mentions that there weren't any other animals with him, I just don't know the answer to that. It's a puzzlement. Verse 13. "I went out by night by the valley gate to the dragon spring and to the dung gate. And I inspected the walls of Jerusalem that were broken down and its gates that were destroyed by fire. Then I went on to the fountain gate and to the king's pool, but there was no room for the animal that was under me to pass." Sort of reminds me of Balaam, where his donkey found a really narrow place and just sat down and wouldn't go with him. Interesting, but I'm not sure what that tells us. So anyway, he goes as far as he can go mounted. 15. "Then I went up in the night by the valley and inspected the wall, and I turned back and entered by the valley gate and so returned. The officials did not know where I had gone or what I was doing. I had not yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, and the rest who were to do the work." So he's making a personal private survey of everything. Hasn't told anybody what's going on. We're going to switch over to Josephus a little bit later. And one of the things that Josephus mentions is that this name of calling them Jews was something that occurred in Babylon. Because, of course, the primary tribe that went into Babylonian exile was Judah, and so they picked up the name Jews in Babylon. Josephus mentions that, Nehemiah just blows right past it. Verse 17, then I said to them, you see the trouble we are in, how Jerusalem lies in ruins with its gates burned. Come, let us build the wall of Jerusalem that we may no longer suffer derision. And I told them of the hand of my God that had been upon me for good, and also the words that the king had spoken to me. And they said, let us arise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for the good work. But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite servant and Gershom the Arab heard of it, they jeered at us and despised us and said, what is this thing you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king? Then I replied to them, the God of heavens will make us prosper, and we, his servants, will arise and build. But you have no portion or right or claim in Jerusalem. Pretty much exactly the same message that Ezra gave. Now, over in Josephus, we have a little bit more of the speech that he gave to everybody. So I'm in Josephus, Antiquities 11, chapter 5, verse 7, and I'm picking it up at line 169. This is obviously third person. He also called together all the people to Jerusalem and stood in the midst of the temple and made the following speech to them. You know, O Jews, that God hath kept our fathers Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in mind continually, and for the sake of their righteousness hath not left off the care of you. Indeed, he has assisted me in gaining this authority of the king to raise up our wall and finish what is wanting of the temple. I desire you, therefore, who know well the ill will our neighboring nations bear to us, and that when once they are made sensible that we are in earnest about building, they will come upon us and contrive many ways of obstructing our works, that you will in the first place put your trust in God, as in him that will assist us against their hatred, and to intermit building neither night or day. Basically saying, when they find out what we're doing, they're going to try and stop us. First thing is, put your trust in God. And then the second thing is, no matter what, don't stop working. That's the sense of that in King James English. So put your trust in God, as in him that will assist us against their hatred, and to intermit building neither night nor day, but to use all diligence and to hasten on the work. Now, we have this a special opportunity for it. So what he's saying is, we have an opportunity now. We have the king's favor. We have the resources. And because of that, we need to strike while the iron is hot. This is our opportunity. We need to make it work. When he had said this, he gave order that the rulers should measure the wall and part the work of it among the people according to their villages and cities as everyone's ability should require. So what he's saying is, now, what I want you to do is I want you to divide up the wall into sections according to people's tribe and occupation. I'm going to switch maps on you. So this next map is laid on its side from the map that I showed you before. The previous map is oriented as north and south as we are used to seeing it. This one has the east as being the top of the map and the north being the left side. And you'll see around there names, and the sections of wall are colored different colors. There's going to be a chapter here in Nehemiah where he says, all right, so this one I gave this section, and he'll just walk you right around that whole thing. I actually do not propose to read that whole thing. For those out there in podcast land, I am in some place called Mavnik.com, M-A-V-I-N-K.com. And I have no idea who they are, except they've got a great map here. And it's Nehemiah Jerusalem wall map. When he had said this, he gave order that the rulers should measure the wall and part the work of it among the people according to their villages and cities that everyone's ability should require. And when he had added this promise that he himself with his servants would assist them, he dissolved the assembly. So the Jews prepared for the work. That is the name they are called from the day that they came up from Babylon, which is taken from the tribe of Judah, which came first to these places. Thence, both they and the country gained that appellation. So what he's saying is, That's why they're called Jews. Back for a minute to Nehemiah. So we're down to chapter 3 in Nehemiah. Then Eliashib, the high priest, rose up with his brothers, the priest, and they built the sheep gate. They consecrated it and set its doors. They consecrated as far as the Tower of the Hundred, as far as the Tower of Hanameel. Next to them, the men of Jericho built. Next to them, Zakur, the son of Imri, built. And so what we're going to do now is have a list of everybody on that map that I showed you with his section of the wall. And the idea there is they built where they lived. Not entirely, because one of the problems that they're going to have is there aren't enough people in Jerusalem. And as they start getting opposition, they're going to have to import more people so that they have enough folks to actually do the work as well as stand guard. Them being responsible for the place they live, in some cases that's the case, in other cases they're just randomly assigned. So that takes us all the way through chapter 3. And you can read all that and take this map if you're interested in what particular group of folks worked on what section of the gate. Now I'm all the way down to chapter 4. Now when Sanballat heard that we were building the wall, he was angry and greatly enraged, and he jeered at the Jews. And he said in the presence of his brothers and of the army of Samaria, "What are these feeble Jews doing? Will they restore it for themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they finish up in a day? Will they revive the stones out of heaps of rubbish and burned ones at that?" This brings up another problem. The time for construction of the wall in Nehemiah is very different than the time in Josephus. Nehemiah appears to indicate that it took 51 days to rebuild the wall. Unless they had squads of angels with them, I find that not credible. Josephus, on the other hand, I don't remember the exact number, but about 2.5 years, which makes a lot more sense. The other thing that is of interest here is where do they get the building materials? One of the things that the emperor allowed them to do is talk to his forester and have the forester cut down trees for timbers as they need. There's also a problem of stones. And one of the things that I don't know, whether limestone is destroyed by fire. You hear Sanballat says, will they finish up in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heap of rubbish and burned ones at that? One of the things I imagine is when the Babylonians threw everything down, I don't think they went through with jackhammers and broke up the stones. But it seems to me that probably what they did is just tip things over. And also, the city was burned with fire, and the gates were burned. So you have stones that were unceremoniously thrown down. So they would be, I imagine, some of them cracked and damaged and so forth. And you also have stones that were in the conflagration. And what I don't know is whether the stones that had been in the conflagration were no longer suitable for the task, in which case they would have had to quarry new stones. And neither Josephus nor Nehemiah talks about quarrying operations and any of that kind of stuff. So he does have permission from the forester to get timbers. But I don't know about stone. He got the wall done, so I'm just curious, and scripture is silent about where he got the rocks. Obviously, some of them would have been salvaged, but how many, I don't know. Comment was, he has read old stone structures, fortresses, and those kinds of things, castles, if you will, that get burned. And of course, the stones don't burn, but the timber supports that are embedded in the stones do burn. So if you have timber embedded into the stone, you know, you have a slot, if you will, cut in the stone, and that's supporting timber that is supporting the next floor. When that timber burns, it may in fact render the stone in which it is embedded no longer usable. And I believe that the stones that are used in Jerusalem are a variety of limestone. So stone that had been in an intense fire may no longer be usable. You remember the building of Solomon's temple, massive quarrying operations, timber being cut in Lebanon and floated down the Mediterranean coast and then trucked overland. The amount of labor for quarrying and that kind of stuff is massive. And none of that is mentioned here. So we just don't know how much of the original stuff was salvaged and how much of they had to come up with new. And that's the same thing for the temple, by the way. Don't know the answer. So we're all the way down now to verse 3 in chapter 4. Tobiah, the Ammonite, was beside him. And he said, yes, what they are building, if a fox goes up on it, he will break down its stone wall. Now that is by way of saying these people are building so flimsily that a fox running across it will cause it to collapse. And this is obviously trash talk on the part of their enemies. The comment was that when Ezra was building, the same group of people complained that it looked like they were going to build a fortress there. They sent a letter to the king, boy, if these guys get that fortress built, you're never going to see any revenue from across the river. So I'm all the way to verse 4. This is now Nehemiah speaking. Hear now, O God, for we are despised. Turn back their taunt on their own heads and give them up to be plundered in a land where they are captives. Do not cover their guilt. Let not their sin be blotted out from your sight, for they have provoked you to anger in the presence of the builders. So Nehemiah is cursing them. Now I'm going to switch back to Josephus, Antiquities 11, 5, chapter 8. But now when the Ammonites and Moabites, Samaritans, and all the inhabitants of Coelesyria, by the way, is Syria. It's an old name. And all the inhabitants of Coelesyria heard that the building went on apace, they took it heinously and proceeded to lay snares for them and hinder their intentions. They also slew many of the Jews and sought how they might destroy Nehemiah himself by hiring some of the foreigners to kill him. The fact that there were Jewish casualties in this process is not mentioned in Nehemiah. They also put the Jews in fear and disturbed them and spread abroad rumors as if many nations were ready to make an expedition against them, by which means they were harassed and had almost left off the building. In other words, what they were saying is, all right, we're gathering all the people around you, none of whom want you guys to rebuild your wall. We're going to come and get you. So they were telling this to the Jews, and the Jews were getting nervous. But none of these things could deter Nehemiah from being diligent about the work. He only set a number of men about him as a guard to his body, and so unwearily persevered therein, and was insensible of any trouble out of his desire to perfect the work. So one of the things we'll see in Nehemiah is they're going to try and lure him out of Jerusalem by, come on, let's talk about this. And the word is that they're going to kill you. So Nehemiah obviously doesn't go, but he's got a personal bodyguard and just keeps right on going. Back to Josephus again. And thus did he attentively and with great forecast take care of his own safety, not that he feared death, but of his persuasion that if he were dead, the walls for its citizens would never be raised. In other words, not particularly worried about my skin, but if I'm gone, the project is going to stop. He also gave orders that the builders should keep their ranks and have their armor on while they were building. Accordingly, the mason had his sword on, as well as he that brought the materials for the building. He also appointed that their shield should lie very near them, and he placed trumpeters at every 500 feet, and charged them that if their enemies appeared, they should give notice of it to the people, that they might fight in their armor, and their enemies might not fall upon them naked. So he's set watchmen with shofars every 500 feet around the wall, and they're supposed to keep watch, and if anybody starts coming, they're supposed to blow the alarm, and everybody that is working is supposed to have arms and armor right there. The sentries are not in Nehemiah, but the idea that they're working with their armor is. He also went about the compass of the city by night, being never discouraged, neither about the work itself, nor about his own diet and sleep, for he made no use of those things for his pleasure, but out of necessity. So what he's doing is every night after the work stops because it's dark, he is going around checking the work. He is authorized to have special rations from the king himself. And one of the things that it'll say in Nehemiah is, I didn't need any of that stuff. I gave it to the people who were working, and I set up so that we were feeding them, but I wasn't having any special rations during this building project. And this trouble he underwent for 2 years and 4 months, for in so long a time was the wall built, in the 28th year of the reign of Xerxes in the ninth month. So Josephus says it's 2 years and 4 months to rebuild the wall. That makes sense to me. Nehemiah seems to indicate it was 51 days. Now that when the walls were finished, Nehemiah and the multitude offered sacrifices to God for the building of them, and they continued in feasting 8 days. However, when the nations that dwelt in Syria heard that the building of the wall was finished, they had indignation at it. But when Nehemiah saw that the city was thin of people, he exhorted the priests and the Levites that they would leave the country and remove themselves to the city. What's happened is the city, it's got walls around it, but it doesn't have any place to live because personal houses had been destroyed. So people are living in the villages around Jerusalem. Well, the problem he's got is he's got hostile neighbors all the way around, and he needs to really get people into the city so that they are able to defend it. What he's going to do is call these people in, get them to move into the city, build them houses, and he is then going to ensure that the tithe of produce and so forth starts coming in so that they are supported. Keep in mind as we start this that the city of Jerusalem was flattened, everything. The temple was flattened, the walls were flattened, everybody's house was flattened, the whole thing was flattened, lack of a better term. When the Romans conquered Carthage, they not only destroyed the city, they plowed the ground around it and sowed it with salt. So the idea there is, not only will you not rebuild the city, but when you do, for a long period of time, there will be no agriculture around that city until such time as rains, which are rare in North Africa, finally leached the salt out of the soil. We don't want that city rebuilt. And by the way, when they destroyed Jerusalem, they did the same thing. I don't know that Nebuchadnezzar went so far as to sow the place with salt, but he did level everything. So when the first group of refugees came back under Ezra and they rebuilt the temple, you have this temple standing naked on the top of a hill. The people are living in villages around there because that's where they've got houses. They haven't yet rebuilt houses inside Jerusalem, and of course they hadn't rebuilt the wall. So when Nehemiah comes and first thing he does is rebuilds the wall, we still don't have places for people to live. What he has to do then in order to get people in there so there's enough people living there to defend the city is he's got to complete the rest of the infrastructure of a city. So I'm still in Josephus. But when Nehemiah saw that the city was thin of people, he exhorted the priests and the Levites that they would leave the country and remove themselves to the city and there continue. And he built them houses at his own expense. And he commanded that part of the people who were employed in cultivating the land to bring the tithes of their fruit to Jerusalem, that the priests and Levites, having whereof they might live perpetually, might not leave the divine worship, who willing hearkened to the constitutions of Nehemiah, by which means the city of Jerusalem came to be fuller of people than it was before. So Josephus gives us a bunch of detail, if you will, that Nehemiah himself doesn't provide. And we also have a different timeline with Josephus than we have with Nehemiah. And quite frankly, as I've said several times now, Josephus's timeline makes more sense to me than does Nehemiah's. So now let's go back to Nehemiah, and I'm still in chapter 4. So Nehemiah has prayed to God that he confuse, confound, and mess up all of his enemies. So we're now down to verse 6. So we built the wall, and all the wall was joined together to half its height, for the people had a mind to work. So they've got the wall all the way around, half height. But when Sambalot and Tobiah and the Arabs and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the repairing of the walls of Jerusalem was going forward and that the breaches were beginning to be closed, they were very angry. And they all plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem to cause confusion in it. And we prayed to our God and set a guard as a protection against them day and night. That's where Josephus is saying that every 500 feet around the wall got a watchman with shofars. 10. In Judah, it was said, the strength of those who bear the burdens is failing. There is too much rubble. By ourselves, we will not be able to rebuild the wall. So they're getting tired, and they're saying, there's too much destruction here. We've got rubble to clear and everything else. We're not going to be able to get this done. Verse 11. And our enemies said, they will not know or see till we come among them and kill them and stop the work. The Jews are getting tired, discouraged. Their enemies are saying, we'll just sneak up on them and they won't know we're coming until we're right among them and we'll kill them all. Verse 12. At that time, the Jews who lived near them came from all directions and said to us 10 times, you must return to us. So in the lowest parts of the space behind the wall, in open spaces, I stationed the people by their clans, with their swords, their spears, and their bows. And I looked and arose and said to the nobles and to the officials and to the rest of the people, do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes. So what he's done is he has gotten people out of the villages in tribal groups. And he's kept them in tribal groups, and he's got them camping out, if you will, behind the wall in sections where their people are working. And when you fight, remember, you're not just fighting for yourself, but you're fighting for your wives, your daughters, your sons, and your homes. 15. When our enemies heard that it was known to us and that God had frustrated their plan, we all returned to the wall, each to his work. From that day on, half my servants worked on construction and half held the spears, shields, bows, and coats of mail. And the leaders stood behind the whole house of Judah, who were building on the wall. Those who carried burdens were loaded in such a way that each labored on the work with one hand and held his weapon with the other. So we are accepting some loss of productivity here in order to be safe. Verse 18. And each of the builders had his sword strapped to his side while he built. The man who sounded the trumpet was beside me, and I said to the nobles and to the officials and to the rest of the people, the work is great and widely spread, and we are separated in the wall far from one another. In the place where you hear the sound of the trumpet, rally to us there. Our God will fight for us. If we get an attack, we'll blow trumpets, and you guys need to pick up and move to where the trumpets are blowing, because we're going to need your help. 21. So we labored in the work, and half of them held the spears from the break of dawn till the stars came out. I also said to the people at that time, let every man and his servant pass the night within Jerusalem, that they may be a guard for us by night and may labor by day. So neither I nor my brothers, nor my servants, nor the men of the guard who followed me, none of us took off our clothes. Each kept his weapon in his right hand. So I imagine after a year, 2 years, that would get kind of old. We're going to change subjects here in chapter 5. And just like Ezra discovered that the Jews were not following the law of Moses with respect to foreign wives and so forth, Nehemiah is going to find out they're not following the law of Moses with respect to lending and so forth. So we're going to have a straightening out of some things according to Moses, and that'll pick up in chapter 5. So we'll stop here for tonight, and we'll pick it up in chapter 5 next week.